In this age of hybrids and straight electric cars, we get different sounds from our vehicles, but there's still a sense of expecting vroom when we go. If we get some other sound or sense, we worry and think about taking the car or truck to the shop. Zach Edwards is the owner of a shop, Ashland Automotive, and he's our partner in a monthly segment we call the Squeaky Wheel. In this context, you are the Squeaky Wheel. Squeak and give us a call or email to talk about automotive issues you've had or are currently having. Again, the phone number is 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Zach, welcome back.
Hey, thank you.
So I've often thought that maybe we should talk about a few winter kinds of things because we're getting to get into the heart of the worst of the winter weather. At least we hope we are because we need the rain. Let's talk about things like jump starting cars because it seems like this is the time of year when cold is going to affect batteries more and people are going to want to get out the jumper cables and start the car that won't start with the car that can. And I was reading up on some of the dangers there because with the stuff you have in your electrical system now, things like onboard computers, there's a bunch of stuff to be concerned about.
Indeed there is, yeah. It is, just to back up for a second, the cold is hard on batteries, but heat is actually worse on batteries.
Okay.
But you will find, if your battery is weak, whether it's hot or cold, if your battery is weak, it's going to, extremely hot or extremely cold, it's going to show up when it's really being tested. And so you're absolutely right that right now, a lot of people are going to have a lot of problems with their batteries. And modern cars are so computerized, it's actually not advisable to jump start somebody with your car anymore. And
as opposed to what, having a tow truck do it?
Well, there's now a lot of devices on the marketplace that are portable jumper packs, mm-hmm. and they used to be huge and heavy, and basically it was like carrying around another car battery with you, which you know how much those weigh. Now they have these portable jumper packs that are amazingly small. The one that I have is, I don't know how to compare it to the size of maybe a small three-ring binder, an 8x5 three-ring binder.
So like half the size of the
half the size of the standard,
the
okay. Yeah. And that thing can jump start a car 35 times without needing to be recharged. It can jump start a diesel truck 10 times without needing to be recharged. Now, those are the statistics that it boasts of on its package. Mm-hmm. I've never jumped a car 35 times with that thing, but I have jumped many, many, many cars, charged my laptop, charged my cell phone 4 times, and various other things without ever recharging this pack. And so a lot of tow trucks now are carrying devices such as that. And then as time has gone on, that product has come down in price, and there's a lot of competitive products now. And so the end user can just be, you could be carrying one of these in your car for good measure, and you could probably pick one up for less than $100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not going to be an industrial one that will jump your car 35 times, but it'll definitely jump your car, and it's a portable power supply for other things as well. So if you're stuck in your car, say, and I can't tell you how often this happens around here, you get caught in a blizzard or there's a car accident and there's no other way off the freeway and you're out there for 10 hours, this way you're not having to run your car to charge devices or it's just handy to have this device.
So you can charge your phone and your laptop, whatever you got with you.
Yeah,
everything. Things that'll help at least get through the time.
Yep, mm-hmm. Most of them have a flashing strobe light on them now for if you're broke down on the side of the road, it can serve as a kind of like a flare. So they're not a bad idea to carry around. And if somebody needs a jump start and you want to be helpful, you're no longer going to risk your car's systems by offering to lend a hand. Because back to what we started talking about, when you offer a jump start to somebody else, the strain really is on your car, not the person getting the jump start. It's a lot of, you're dishing out, loaning basically a lot of amperage to somebody else, and that there's a large surge when that happens. And that can wipe out an alternator, or worse, electricity is hard to, there's a lot of theory, but it can really cause a surge through computer systems. And then you could develop funny problems afterwards that you might not ever really know how they happen, but they could easily be attributed to a jump start of a really dead battery.
So what, you know, for example, if your onboard diagnostics computer took a whomping from a jump start or something else, I mean, does it at least have some subcapacity to be able to identify what's wrong with it?
Yeah, and so you referenced the onboard diagnostic computer, and it's not really that it's not that simple anymore. You know, there might be 50, 60 computers in a car, especially some of the German cars. You have, you know, one computer just for your power windows. You have another computer maybe for your power locks, another computer for your sunroof, another computer for your infotainment system, another computer for your transmission, and another one for your engine. And so any one of those, depending on the logic written into the programs, could be affected during that moment when you're doing the jump start. So depending on what's being powered, depending on what's activated, what's not activated, there could be a surge of amperage flow in that moment. And depending on if that circuit is protected, if the, you know, a lot of those circuits have protection in them, but a lot of them don't. And back to what I was saying about electricity, is kind of hard to, it's hard to know where it's at, when it's at, and what's flowing through what circuits at what time. But it's just, it's not uncommon for damage to happen as a result of jump-starting somebody else's car.
Right, so basically, okay, so if you have a couple of cars that are 35 years old, those are the ones to jump-start.
But, yeah, and let alone that, you know, the fact that a lot of people make a mistake when they're jumping somebody else's car, and they might not have a real good ground connection. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you, when you hook up your ground, if you hook it up to the battery, which is not advised, you're supposed to hook to a known good ground.
On a receiving vehicle.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little spark gets tossed right then and there. And if there's, you know, the gas buildup on top of the battery, that can cause your battery to explode. And so it's, you know, I know jump starting, we do it all the time. We've all done it a bunch of times, but there is an inherent risk in it. And
a bigger risk to a more modern car, it sounds like.
I've advised my child, do not jump start any of your friends' cars.
Uh-huh.
Because they're constantly having to be jump started. And so I'm going to give him my old jumper pack and then get a new one, because I've used mine up pretty good. And it's just a lot of problems can happen.
How long does it take to charge the jumper pack itself?
You know, it's a pretty long time. It's definitely an overnight type of thing. It's
okay,
not
it's
a
got
rapid.
A lot of amps in there.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically a huge capacitor, from what I can tell, and I would really hate if that thing leaked, you know. probably put quite a charge into somebody, but it probably takes 10, 12 hours to charge that.
Okay, not surprised. Those are the charging packs we're talking about with Zach Edwards here on the Squeaky Wheel on the Jefferson Exchange. You got vehicle issues you want to talk about or stories you'd like to swap? Let us hear. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Bonnie in Medford. Welcome to the Squeaky Wheel.
Hi. I will try to explain the problem. I usually drive with the radio on, so I hadn't noticed this before, but one day I was driving up a hill near my home, and it was first thing in the morning, and I, when the car was going into second gear, I could hear this faint whining sound, but then it went away. I mean, it was like a second or two.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, the car drives fine. I haven't had any problems.
And manual or automatic transmission, Bonnie?
It's an automatic. It's
okay.
A 2007 CRV.
Okay, so CRV. So you don't get it in that first gear when you're just leaving the driveway, but going uphill second gear,
you
can hear that.
When I'm going up this pretty steep hill, I hear it. But I don't hear it when I'm driving on the flat.
Okay. And have you turned the radio down to hear it a little better, or is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, after I heard it that one time, I've noticed it more, you know, but it's not loud or anything. It's just...
And, Bonnie, do you hear this every time on the same spot?
Yeah. It's just this one hill I go up that it goes into second, and then I can hear that sound.
Yeah, that's fascinating. What I would advise you to do, because the noise you're describing could be so many different things, what I would really advise you to do is take it to your trusted shop and tell them that for them to hear the noise, tell them to drive it exactly the same place you drive it with about the same warm-up time. So if you need to leave it there for an overnight so that they can get that first cold drive in the morning. Because duplicating a customer's concern is half the battle. Oftentimes with some of these difficult symptoms. But I have no doubt that a good shop is going to be able to, once they hear that noise, they'll be able to pick a couple of things that they want to inspect or test and get to the bottom of it. You know, it could be just a brake noise, which, why does it only happen going up a hill? I don't really know, but weirder things have happened. It could be a problem in your transmission. It could be a problem with, I don't know if this is an all-wheel drive CRV, but,
no.
You know, okay, it's not. It could be a wheel bearing type of a noise, or, you know, just sometimes the strangest things happen at the strangest times, and why this hill is really making an effect on it, I'm not sure. You know, it could be something on your engine, like just a squeaking belt or a whining belt. That's being stressed a little bit harder because you're pulling a harder load up the hill. And then
why I wondered about a belt, because it seems to only happen early in the morning. I mean, it seems like when the car is cold, that's when it...
Do you ever drive it later in the day, the same hill?
Yeah, and then I don't notice.
Yeah, that's just kind of... A lot of this stuff is temperature dependent, so... Once the car's warmed up, it's been moving around a little bit. It's very much like your body when if you've been sleeping or lying, you know, horizontal all night, and then you get up and you're kind of stiff and creaky. And then once you get moving, you get the juices flowing a little bit, everything feels a little better. And cars are like that too. And so it's probably temperature dependent. And if it gets any worse, or if you're concerned about it now, just take it in. And like I said, tell them exactly what they need to do to hear the noise. And if they can hear the noise, they stand a lot better chance of solving the problem for you.
Bonnie, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. And best of luck in getting that solved. It sounds like the car drives fine the rest of the time. This is the Squeaky Wheel on the Jefferson Exchange. Zach Edwards here to take in your questions and stories about vehicular care and vehicular mysteries, for that matter. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Does it make a difference sometimes? Like, you know, if somebody's describing to you, well, it goes like this, it goes rrr, 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 rrr. And then when you actually hear the noise, it actually goes ee, and then all of a sudden you understand what it is.
That's one of the more fun parts of the job is when I work the front counter, I love trying to get people to make the noise because they're usually embarrassed and they don't want to make the noise, but it's actually a pretty important part of the process. I mean, we have to start somewhere, and whether they do a great job of making the noise or not, doesn't really matter. It just adds a little fun to it. But yeah, if they can get us pointed in some direction, then we have somewhere to go and work from there.
Another call here from Karen in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on the Squeaky Wheel.
Hey, Karen.
Yes, I was following a car yesterday that had that strap dragging under the car. And I've heard about it before, but I can't remember why they do that.
Is it a fabric strap or something else?
I couldn't see it. We were rolling down the road, but I've heard of it before that people put something on, drags on the ground, especially in the winter. Does it have to do with static electricity or something?
Yeah, it's a rubber strap is what they do.
Oh.
I think it's rubber, and I used to have an explanation for this, and it's been a long time since I've thought about it. But yeah, they're trying to prevent, I think, themselves from getting shocked when they get out of the car or when they, the building up static electricity.
All right, so there's got to be some metal component in that rubber strap, I would think, that would keep it connected to the ground and keep it grounded.
Yeah.
The static.
Yeah, because if it was a metal strap, of course, it would be throwing sparks, though.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we know what that does around here after your last segment.
Yeah.
You know, There's a couple cars in town that have it, and I know the people that do that. And I think maybe next time I see him, I'm going to ask him exactly his logic, and I'm going to do a little research,
mm-hmm.
and we'll come back to that because that's a great question.
Okay, I don't think it's dragging strap. Thanks for that, Karen.
Most of those cars are generally very old. The two I'm thinking of are, you know, they're from the 60s, actually. And it's definitely a grounding. It's a precaution to, I think, add more isolation from the ground.
Okay.
Like, because your tires are already doing that.
That's right.
You know, kind of insulating you from the ground.
Well, so. That's the weird thing. There are times, and it seems like when the weather is drier, that's when the static buildup gets greater. And it's interesting, too, come to think of it. I don't think it happens with the car I'm driving now, but it happened with the previous one where I'd put my hand out the window and, you know, on the body of the car.
Well, and you know, modern cars have a lot more ground connections. I'm thinking of my old Volkswagen. There was a ground strap from the transmission where they... the gear shift input shaft was, there was a ribbon strap, and then there was a ground, the battery was grounded to the frame, and those might have been the only two major ground connections on that car. Well, nowadays there's, the ground connections are more numerous and more strategically located, and you know, grounding is a really important part of all these computerized systems. So that could easily account for why you don't feel, you know, any static anymore, where on older cars you did.
All right. That makes a certain amount of sense. I got questions or comments for Zach about vehicular behavior. Give us a call here at 800-838-3760 or send an email to jx@jeffnet.org. We talked about the jump starts. Now, we didn't talk about push starts, which is something else that people sometimes do with a car that has a manual transmission. I presume it can't be done on an automatic transmission.
No, it can't.
Okay. So manual transmission, you roll the car forward when you got the dead battery and pop the clutch after a few strides and hope the engine catches.
And you have to remember to turn your key on.
Oh, yeah.
That's the worst, is when you get all that momentum build up, you're expelling all this energy, you got your friends pushing the car, and it doesn't start after you pop the clutch because you didn't turn the key on. So, yeah, there's not very many manual transmissions on the road anymore. I think maybe 10 or 8% of new car sales are manual transmissions, if not less.
And isn't that funny? As you find out, if you travel to Europe and try to rent a car, it's like 90%. It's like the other way totally. Everybody drives a manual.
Yeah, yeah. Really fascinating. And sometimes I find myself driving a manual transmission, and it just feels, it's nostalgic because it's been so long. I still have this old Volkswagen that's a 4-speed, the van, and I haven't driven that thing in 3 years, but when I do, it's just so strange.
Okay, I guess we don't need to talk about push starts very much because it hardly happens anymore. Let's talk about cars stuck in snowbanks, though. Anything you need to do to make sure that you don't do something like burn out your transmission when you and some friends are trying to get a car unstuck from a ditch or snowbank?
Well, one thing I was going to suggest, a lot of people don't know that, especially with European cars, next to your spare tire, if you have a spare tire, because actually, you know, Mini Coopers don't have spare tires, but somewhere in your toolkit is a hook there's a threaded hole in your subframe that's specially made for installing a tow hook or a pull hook. And so underneath one of your covers in the back cargo area next to maybe your roadside kit or your spare tire, there's going to be like an eyelet, a big heavy-duty eyelet, and there's a little cover in your front and rear bumper cover that you can pop off with your key, and inside there is going to be the threaded hole where that eyelet screws in. So if you find yourself, if you're, you know, going skiing or whatever, and you go off the road and you need to get pulled out, that's what you would attach with. And of course, all this information is in your owner's manual. A lot of people don't read their owner's manual, and it's just packed full of useful little tidbits of information.
So does it make you feel better when you get a new car and you notice that the owner's manual looks like it's been read a lot versus the one that hasn't?
Well, it's intimidating because owner's manuals are 120 pages now.
Huge. Yeah.
They're a novel. And of course, there's all these options in there that you may or may not have. And so you find yourself reading your owner's manual like, oh, wow, I have a heads-up display on my windshield that displays. No, you don't, actually.
Yeah, because I know. I look for the same thing. It's like, oh, the sensor's right. No, that's not it.
I don't have that option. I don't have that option. No, I got the bottom of the line. But yeah, the finding a place to hook a tow strap to on modern vehicles is really difficult, and you can do some damage if you hook it to the wrong spot. And so that is kind of useful information to know, like if I need to get tugged out, how are we going to do this? Of course, tow truck drivers generally are pretty good with that stuff.
Mm. But you know, it was Maynard, years ago talking to Maynard Hadley when he was still alive about handling towing stuff. Uh-huh. He said he was on a committee that was actually talking to the car manufacturers because they weren't providing places where you could grab the car anymore for a tow. And he said you could pull the pleats out that would destroy some of the crash resistance systems.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. They probably got ahead of themselves, and then they had to back up a little bit. There was probably a period of time, the no man's zone, where those cars are dangerous if you have to pull them out of a ditch.
Indeed. A couple seconds left. I just want to ask about being careful not to like think you got it made because you got four-wheel drive in the winter. Don't try to take on big snowbanks, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think we all remember the incident, the Bear Camp Road incident a long time ago where I think it was David Kim tried to cross Bear Camp Road in the wintertime. He had an all-wheel drive Saab. It was a 9.5 Aero, I think, but it was all-wheel drive. But, you know, ground clearance is a huge part of all-wheel drive. And like you said, even if you have four-wheel drive and big ground clearance, it's pretty tough to traverse some of these deep snow conditions out in the mountains here. And if you get stuck out there, you could be out there for a long time.
Yeah, so don't assume you got it made just because you got power to all the wheels of your car. All right, we learn something new every month here on The Squeaky Wheel with Zach Edwards, the proprietor of Ashland Automotive. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you, Jeff.
Get your questions for next month. We'll talk to Zach in early February.